It is the end of April. It's the 29th. Damn.
Kid's birthday is next weekend. And Texas Frightmare weekend as well.
It is episode 131 of the Scary Dad Podcast, and this is going to be a little bit of an independent film festival. We're just going to chat about some cool low-budget and independent horror films.
Which there's been some really... Some of the independent films that were considered independent films, they weren't put out by major networks, have been some of the most groundbreaking horror movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays you got the people are riding on a wave of success with horror movies right now from the big motion picture companies and everything. Which I would actually put Lionsgate in there also, as far as one of the larger motion picture companies.
Yeah, for sure.
But for a long time, they steered clear of horror, and it was up to the independent filmmakers to give us the movies that we love, man. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into that in just 1 second. First,
the old business.
Okay. On this date in 1862, the capture of New Orleans by Union troops in the Civil War. It was an important defeat for the Confederacy. Also, a pretty damn good thing that it happened the way that it did, because the end of the war was pretty much inevitable. The South was never going to win. The North had them outnumbered, outgunned, outsupplied. When you look at sheer numbers and statistics, the best that was ever going to happen was a draw.
Right.
But the North was going to end up beating them. So if you know how cool New Orleans is. And you know all of that stuff, right? You know, if there would have been any kind of siege or a blockade, all of that cool stuff would have gotten just destroyed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for the same result. So it's good that they went in there and just locked it down real quick. And that was a good thing. On this date in 1945, the Dachau concentration camp was liberated by the Allies. I've been to this place. It's outside of Munich. About an hour outside of Munich in Germany, and it is frightening because it's this giant ass compound that's surrounded by a neighborhood.
Hmm.
Yeah, and most of the houses there are not very, or they're old. They're not very new.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, sometimes you see houses that are built along a cemetery, and you're like, man, how can you live there?
Yeah. Right.
Imagine living
in that shadow.
Yeah. And it is really eerie because Bavaria basically is extremely, I mean, it looks like this all the time. It's sunshiny, it's, you know, the greens are so green and the blues are so blue that it's almost super saturated. It hurts because it's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And then you just have this place of ultimate horror that's just a living monument to, you know, you walk in, they've got the guard towers and they got the wrought iron fence that says work makes you free.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. And then all those people, like, how did you not know that was going on? Your house backs up to the walls.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew what was going on in there. Right. You know, it's like you're living near the prison, but still.
So it's a place of tourism at this point.
It is.
And you feel like it's something that should be kept?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for historical preservation?
Yeah. So basically, it's giant, like it's a giant rectangle, and you walk in here, and here was like the main house, like the main offices and that kind of stuff, and also where they tortured them. And then you've got the big field where they used to have the barracks, you know, basically the
living quarters.
The living quarters. And on the back side was where they had the gas chambers and the ovens.
Wow.
All of the living chambers, that's all gone. So it's just foundations where you can see where it was. So now it's in this big wide open field. But then different monuments have been built. So like the Russian Orthodox Church built one, and it's got, you know how like the Kremlin has that, like the round little spire things? There's like a little thing there. It's like the Greek Orthodox has one. Like everybody that had that lost a bunch of people in that place. And there's all these little places that are built up, and there's tours that show you, like, they've got like the little benches and stuff where they used to tie them up and beat them and stuff. They show that stuff. I mean, it really is a sobering thing, and it's bizarre that it was just so. I mean, that's one of many. There was many of those types of places, and there was bigger ones. You know, Dachau was the first one. But yeah, it's pretty. It's terrifying, really. Mm-hmm. So this date in 1945. So this was same day Dachau was liberated. 1945. Hitler marries Eva Braun, and then tomorrow he will commit suicide. Mm. So is she.
Yeah. As far as we know.
Yeah.
It's those conspiracy theories, of course.
There are some of those. All right. 1953. The first experimental 3D television broadcast showed an episode of Space Patrol on an affiliate in Los Angeles.
Huh.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Makes me think of Halloween 3, though. Come on, kids, put on your glasses. And in 1967, for refusing to join up and go to Vietnam, Muhammad Ali was stripped of his boxing title.
The Cassius Clay.
Yep. All right. Notable births. 1863, William Randolph Hearst basically designed the modern media.
Yep.
If it bleeds, it leads. Man bites dog. That whole works. Mm-hmm. Sensationalistic news. 1933, Willie Nelson was born. 1954, Jerry Seinfeld. 1958, the only Catwoman, Michelle Pfeiffer.
I don't know if you saw, they had a video that came out a couple weeks ago where she was showing she still had it with the whip. Yeah,
oh, dude. Wow. Yeah, she's up there.
Yeah.
Like there's everybody else, and then there's Michelle Pfeiffer, and she's just that, like, I think her and Slash are in like. 1970, Uma Thurman. And in notable deaths on this date in 1980, Alfred Hitchcock.
That's a pretty big one.
Mm-hmm.
Master of horror and suspense.
A lot of really good stuff coming out of Alfred.
Yeah.
And that is it for old business. So take a break and come back for the news.
Woolworth and Woolco to get set for Halloween. There's costumes of TV favorites like Wonder Woman and the Hulk. There's popular characters from Star Wars, and there's superheroes like Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, and many more at bare bones prices, $238 to $417. And there's spook sticks, face pops, Hallowitches, wrapped candy of every kind, all at the favorite Halloween haunts, Woolworth and Woolco.
Every year of a gift certificate that turns into a soft drink, oh, it can happen this Halloween. When you give out McDonald's Halloween gift certificates, kids take them to McDonald's and they get a McDonald's soft drink. A book of 20 Halloween gift certificates costs only $1. And can turn into 20 regular soft drinks. It must be the magic of Halloween.
Nobody can do what McDonald's can.
Nobody.
All right, no further ado.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Have you seen it's in the news right now, so everybody's talking about the recently released trailer for the new Child's Play remake.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it? I'm still not excited, unfortunately, from what I can see in the preview. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I find it interesting. Mark Hamill will be voicing the doll now. But I still have my problems with it. What do you guys, how did you guys feel about the trailer?
Hold on one second.
Okay, so what do you guys think? You excited? Yay, nay?
I'm really not. I mean, it's an interesting take that it's, instead of a ghost, it's a AI.
Yeah.
But kind of the thing that made Chucky so scary was that you could burn the doll, but he would just jump from doll to doll to doll.
Yeah, you can continue going.
Once he did that incantation, then he was no longer rooted in. Mm-hmm. And so then the further story of Chucky is like, there's no getting rid of him. There's nothing you can do. You can burn all of the dolls. He'll jump into a different one. You know, and with this, it's like, I don't know. It's all right.
Well, one of the issues I have with one of the things that made the original Child's Play just so awesome, you had a really little kid that was the protagonist in that movie. And with this one, you got a teenager, which that's the first thing I thought. I was like, well, what the hell is he doing getting a buddy doll? You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it should be still a little kid. You know, and to me, that takes away from some of the terror. You know, I don't want to see, there's not a single 9-year-old child I want to see get hurt or anything, but there's some 14-year-old kids that are kind of assholes that I wouldn't mind seeing some shit happen to. You know, it doesn't make them nearly as endearing as it did the original Andy from the original Child's Play. They don't give you much of Mark Hamill's voice, but it sounds cool. The doll just looks so different. I can't get into it. Now, one thing, the director did come out and proclaim that, don't worry, guys, it's not going to be all full of CGI. 80% of the movie is going to be actual animatronics, like in the original movie, which is kind of cool. You know, I was happy that he did announce that. It's not going to be all CGI'd out and stuff. But I still just can't get excited about it.
See, I would think, too, and this is just my creative... They revealed that instead of a ghost, it is going to be...
AI. It's AI. A factory worker drops a chip in it that...
So why would you need an adult voice? The whole point of Brad Dourif was that he was the serial killer.
So his voice would come out.
So his voice comes out of the doll.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If the doll's programmed with a child's voice... Or
it should sound like the little kid from Pet Cemetery.
Yeah, it should sound like a little kid. That would be scary as hell, because kids are scary. So you have a little plastic one that's creeping around like the little dude from the little Zulu doll. Mm-hmm. Running around stabbing you with his spear and stuff. Now you give him a child's voice. Damn.
Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. What did you think?
I saw it and I immediately noticed, you know, all the references that the naysayers were talking about. But I like Aubrey Plaza. I do like her as an actress. I think she's quirky. She's a little different. She's the one playing the mother. And I love Mark Hamill. So, you know, his voice stuff has always been great. So I think he's going to do good. I really love that they're going to use more practical effects, which is a little bit better, in my opinion. You know, you can get away with it. I don't like what they did with The Thing, the prequel. Was, you know, they used a lot of CGI versus Carpenter's The Thing, which was all,
it was,
you know,
all practical effects.
Yeah, it was all practical. Amazing. So it makes a big difference for people who really truly love horror. But going back to what you were saying with how it does seem like it's geared now more towards a younger audience than the first Chucky. The first Chucky, I mean, yeah, had a little kid, had a little doll, but it was all adult. It was all adult entertainment. This now seems like a Happy Death Day. Some of these other horror flicks that are coming out that are more geared toward the 16 to the 21-year-old. And I think this is going that same route. And I'm not saying that adults won't be able to enjoy this, but I think all the kids with the cell phones and the iPads and all that, I think this is going to be more for them than it is going to be for some of us older folks who truly love, you know, the horror genre.
Agreed.
So we'll still see how that plays out. You know, we've done our...
Oh, I'm sorry, real quick. And the Orion opening of the production company, I thought that was sweet. I love anything where they show the old production companies that in the beginning of the screen, New Line, if they use the old New Line with the Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, or Orion or any of those, I love it. And when that opened up, I think it either opened up or it closed out with the Orion Pictures.
That is cool.
Yeah, I really do like that they did that.
We've done shows on Unsolved Mysteries before, as you remember. CW has announced a new show that's going to kind of play off of it called Mysteries Decoded. It's going to be an hour-long investigative documentary series similar to Unsolved Mysteries, where they'll delve deeper into some of America's greatest unsolved mysteries, exploring newly discovered evidence and utilizing high-tech tools in reopening each case. From Area 51 to Salem Witch Trials, each investigation is led by Jennifer Marshall, an accomplished U.S. Navy veteran turned top-notch private investigator. So It sounds like it might be a little interesting.
It does sound cool.
CW, so you know how much we miss Unsolved. And of course, with no Robert Stack, it's not going to have that ominous feel. It's one thing, I don't know if you probably never heard our Unsolved Mysteries episode, but it's just that music and Robert Stack as a child would just scare the hell out of you, man. You know?
I think it did the same thing that Rod Sterling did, you know, in Twilight Zone to our parents.
Right.
It was just,
right, definitely.
Yeah, especially like those little shorts. Because he'd have like the main episode stuff and then like the little spot like coming back. Like, because you remember when your commercials, you'd have like your 2 minutes of commercials, like three or four commercials. Mm-hmm. And then when the show would come back for like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, and then go away again for another commercial. So he'd come in and be like, joom, you know, 1966, blah, blah, blah. Man walks into a store, kills six people. Nobody ever knew why. And it's like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And then it goes back to commercial. Those were the scariest because it's like, there's no build-up. There's no backstory. It's just like, damn, mystery. We're out.
Okay, so we've had movies we've enjoyed that featured zombie sheep and zombie beavers and so many other zombie animals. A recent Yale University research team have been involved with a study where they were able to revive to a certain extent the brains of pigs that had been killed in the slaughterhouse hours after they had already been killed, essentially giving us the road that we may start going down for zombie pigs, which ought to be creepy. Some things you don't mess with. You just leave it alone. So they have said that none of the brains regain the kind of organized electrical activity associated with consciousness or awareness. But still, it showed a surprising amount of cellular function was either preserved or restored by their methods.
Interesting.
Implications of the study have staggered ethicists as they contemplate how this research should move forward and how it fits into the current understanding of what separates the living from the dead. So we're looking at a serpent and a rainbow situation with pigs right now.
I think also Alien Covenant, when they discovered one of the severed heads. And they put some probes, some deals in there to try to give it back chemical life and electrical life, and it started working, and the eyes opened up, and it was moving, but then it was overstimulated, and then it exploded.
Yeah.
But it was so neat how they were able to reanimate that brain. They were going to try to get some feedback from it. So now it's real. It's not just Hollywood.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Well, it's just, ever since the publication of Modern Prometheus, this has been just one of the things that man wanted to figure out a way to do. So,
well, and to think that she wrote that story, it was like, this is a horror story. This is literally man's hubris gone to the extreme ends. Don't do this. And then, of course, we're like, hey, you know what would be a really good idea? This.
Okay. 49-year-old man was apprehended, okay, after he removed an iguana from underneath his shirt and began swinging the reptile by the head and and tail over his head in an attack to some folks at a restaurant that he was in where he was dissatisfied with the service. They were able to track the man down. This happened in Painesville County. I believe it was in Florida, if I'm not mistaken. So, location was at Perkins Restaurant. They were able to apprehend him shortly after the incident. I did see a follow-up to the story that the iguana did suffer a broken leg from the guy. There's actually pictures from security camera of this guy pulling this lizard out and apparently initially using the tail as a whip, trying to hit people and then swinging it by the tail.
Why would you do that? Just use a stick.
I have a feeling it was something that was methed up.
poor Cooper. The police department nicknamed him Cooper.
Yes.
Poor Cooper.
Okay. And also, speaking of methed up, Dickinson woman right here in the home state of Texas.
Hey, Johnny lives in Dickinson, doesn't he?
Yes, I'm not far from it either. She was charged with possession after she was stopped for a traffic violation. Officers were going through her purse and just found a bunch of meth at the bottom. And she explained to them, those are my healing crystals. And apparently, apparently, what's cool is, Miss Cactus Calendaris That's the actual name. Was arrested April 13th and charged with possession of a controlled substance. She actually thought that they were going to go ahead and buy that. Oh, those are healing crystals? Okay, we won't bother testing them. That's fine. I believe you. Not a problem. Yeah, so Miss Cactus Caladeris was arrested for possession.
That made TV news also.
That's pretty awesome, dude.
But that is what I got.
I mean, you have to realize that, you know, these people are all methed up or whatever. It's like the guy on Cops years ago. It's like the only scene, like I've seen dozens of episodes of Cops, you know, hundreds over the years. But the one I remember the most is like kicking this dude's door and he goes trying to run and they tackle him. They're like, what you got with all this drugs and money in your pockets? He's like, these are not my pants. It's like, well, not bad. Oh, man, that's awesome. All right, let's go and we'll come back.
I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. I am so... so sorry, because it is my fault, because it was my project.
The search of the three missing Montgomery College students continues in Frederick County tonight.
10 days and thousands of man hours have been unable to produce any clues.
We have a few leads, a few other options we want to take advantage of and just try to put together some pieces to this puzzle.
Do you believe the occult may be involved in the disappearance of your son?
I am so scared.
Well, this all started because I've actually picked up an occasional, and as of today, nothing's been published yet, but I picked up an occasional like freelance gig with a online horror magazine. And I'm not sure to what extent I will be actually contributing, but they've assigned me a couple of things to review. And I had to watch this movie that sucked so bad that I texted Scott the next day and was like, dude, did you ever watch a movie that's so bad it pissed you off?
And I said, yes.
And it was not a ridiculous premise. It was just put together wrong. Mm-hmm. And, so like, no matter what happens, you know, a movie's got to be scary. If you're making a horror movie, it's either got to be scary or it's got to be funny. Like, it's got to
be fun.
It's got to be so bad it's good, or it's got to be good, mm-hmm. or else it just sucks. You know, and I put in the review that there are so many beloved horror movies that are technical crap fests, like bad acting, bad special effects, bad...
just low budget.
Just mm-hmm. bad all the way around that, hey, but at least they got the scary part right. It is scary. So we can forgive all that other crap. Man, it really kind of kept me up at night. Or it's schlocky and it's fun. You know, you can forgive it if it's one or the other. If it sucks and it sucks and it's not scary, then it's no good. So we were just chatting about that because he and I have stumbled upon some really good low-budget independent movies. Like one for example, was like Zombievers. We were at his house doing a show, and he turned on TV, and it was just on. And we were both like, ha, 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 how stupid is this? And an hour and a half later, we're both like...
he doesn't want to leave till it's over.
Yeah, it's awesome, you know? Yeah.
And there's so many independent films like that.
It's ridiculous, and it's stupid, and it's all of the above, but it was fun. Mm-hmm. And it was compelling. It made you want to keep watching it, you know?
And all these films are somebody's passion. Like, for Texas Frightmare Weekend, I just got through helping with the... going through all the submissions for the film festival, which was, you know, almost 1,700 independent films that we had to review. And, you know, all these things are somebody's labor of love. Mm-hmm. And just... some of them just hit. And it's amazing, you know? And mm-hmm. at one time, that's how horror movies were made. Yep. You know, now we have... And it's a beautiful thing, but now we have so many platforms for distribution of movies. You know, it's, you don't have to be in the movie theater. You know, there's tons of streaming services. Mm-hmm. There's the internet. You know, you could put, what was the one, the Friday the 13th fan film that is...
Never Hike Alone.
Never Hike Alone. You know, that was one that was released onto YouTube, and now it just kind of blew up and gained a cult following, and it's being promoted now. So, yeah, there's a lot more room for independent.
I bought
films
that
now.
By the way.
Yeah, you did. You got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, I haven't got it yet. I backed their Indiegogo, yeah. So I'll get a DVD.
Awesome, dude.
Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
It's awesome. It's really, really good. Yeah.
So yeah, so independent films are just to me, especially you don't see a lot of you see some, but not to the level of horror movies with like comedies and dramas and romance with independent films. You know. For a long time, that's how horror movies were made only. Major studios would not touch horror movies. They just veered clear of them.
Or they'd open up a you know, like a side segment because they weren't going to commit their A or even their B list to scary movies, which is weird because if you look at the history of horror, you know, Alfred Hitchcock, for example, you know, hit after hit after hit. You know, things like The Birds and Psycho and Rear Window. Like, would you really call... I mean, Psycho, well...
They're more suspense.
They're suspense, but they fall under that umbrella. I mean, they've got all of the elements for true horror. And they're box office hits. You know, people are buying them. They're going to see. But yeah, it wasn't until they started getting soft in the 90s that the big studios started getting a hold of the horror, which is kind of... I'm glad they stayed in the hands of the independents because if you think about it, once the big studios started doing their own horror stuff, then they're like, ooh, horror sells. Let's take out all the boobs and all the violence and all the blood and all of the... And we'll put a fake industrial soundtrack on it and call it a horror movie.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of those in the late 90s and early 2000s that are just unwatchable. You know? But, like the whole, like I Know What You Did Last Summer. That was a pretty good one by itself, but all the sequels and all of the kind of stuff surrounding that, the Scream wannabes, were.
So I think that's where they got bad because I know when Wes Craven did Scream, it, for a lot of folks who liked horror, who love horror, that was a win for us because you know it would always seem like. It was difficult for some of these guys to make these movies.
Yeah.
And then now all of a sudden, you know, you have a big budget.
Big budget, big name actors.
Big name actors that, you know, like the I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream. And I just thought that was amazing. And they did, the guys, they didn't sell out. Mm-hmm. You know, they just did what they always did, just on a bigger scale.
Yeah. That's how I credit Scream for starting a resurgence of horror. Mm-hmm. It fallen down big time. I mean, when
well,
Scream
it,
came
you
out,
know, that was a that was not an indie film at all.
Right,
dude. I remember because I don't remember exactly like the timeline, but I remember seeing Scream and talking to my buddy, and Titanic had just come out, and I hadn't seen it yet. He's like, man, if you like Scream. He's like, you need to see Titanic. He's like, that ship takes out all the motherfuckers. He's like, the body count on that one's huge. I was like, dude, that's awesome. But no, so I pulled a bunch of, I use IMDb filters.
Uh-huh.
And so basically this list of low budget winners. So these are the lowest budget movies with the highest box office return.
Okay.
Ranked from 1 to 10. So, we'll start at number 10, 1979's When a Stranger Calls.
Mm-hmm. Great movie. Carol King.
Babysitter movie, isn't it? It's not the one where the baby's coming from inside
dinner,
the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was remade, but the original, I remember as a kid, that was one of the ones that used to come on late night, Showtime and the Movie Channel and stuff. And it was... It'd get to you, man.
Mm-hmm.
You watch that movie late at night as a child in the dark, you... Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It could mess with you for sure. That was an excellent movie.
Number 9 is Friday the 13th, Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8 is Hills Have Eyes, the original from 77. 7 is the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
So there's two Wes Craven films you've talked about already. Yeah.
Number 6 is Open Water from 2003. Remember that one, the shark movie?
Mm-hmm.
Number 5 is Friday the 13th, the original. Number 4 is 28 Days Later. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
When they cleared out London for that one shot where he's all alone.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool. Number 3 is Halloween from 1978.
Yep.
Number 2 is Paranormal Activity from 2007.
And that movie blew me away. Just Paranormal seeing that one in the theater.
Yeah. Great.
I remember they had all these clips. Once the movie kind of took off, they started the way they started promoting was just, one, it was word of mouth. People just letting everybody know this movie scared the shit out of me. But then they started like sending, I remember the first time I saw videos of audience reactions during the movie. They would set up these cameras with night vision to film people. And it was just amazing to see an entire sea of people jump back all at the same time. I mean, yeah. That movie was
good. Paranormal Activity was badass.
And the question of, is that real footage?
Yeah
it seemed like it was.
Yeah, that
it
really did. That really helped.
And it's honestly, my daughter Olivia, that is the movie that made her really enjoy horror movies. she saw that. The thing about it is, there's no sex in it. You know, there's nothing bad. So she saw it at a fairly young age. And she used to ask me all the time, can I watch Paranormal Activity again? that movie is... That's a scary one. They did an incredible job with that, man, especially for the budget they had. I mean, there was
nothing.
It was, four people walking around with a camera, pretty much.
Well, number one is still Blair Witch Project.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which
that one I didn't get into as much as Paranormal Activity. See, the thing is,
time has not been very kind with Blair Witch. But I remember when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big deal.
That was late 90s, like 98?
It came out in 99.
99, there you go.
But that was the thing about Blair Witch, because I saw Blair Witch at the River Oaks Theater. It was an independent film. So, right. Like, that's where it was released. And I remember walking into the bathroom and somebody had puked in there. And we go to sit down in the theater. And the guy comes out before the movie comes on. And he's like, there is shaky camera footage. You will feel nauseous. Please don't try to fight it. If you feel sick, go to the bathroom.
Yeah, and you're like whoa.
it's hard to watch. I didn't have a problem watching it. I remember it scared the shit out of me, though. Just the mood of it all. Like, it was it was a really, really well-made movie. And I was with my girlfriend at the time, and we went afterwards to get some coffee, and then, like, it's just, like, the trees would blow. And it's like just kind of muffle through the trees and the wind and stuff and just kind of give you that feel.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think either one of us really recovered from the movie into the rest of the evening.
Right.
Which means it's a good, scary movie. But what made it better was the marketing beforehand. Like, they did so much with little websites.
Mm-hmm.
They made up that town.
Yeah.
And if you Google the town, it takes you straight to Blair Witch Story. It was like... I don't think Google was even around, or if it was, it was like hardly anything. But if you Yahooed or AOL'd the
Lycos and all those,
you typed in the name of the town, and you'd be brought to the missing person stuff. Like, and they had a town charter, and like it's a real small town with all of this missing crap going on. You're like, shit, this is real.
Yeah,
you know, it's so awesome. But yeah, these. I mean, still. The most successful independent films, or not even necessarily independents, but low budgets. These are the ones with the lowest budgets and the highest box offices.
Right.
And if you look at, you know, so Paranormal Activity, Blair Witch, Handycams, tape, Paranormal Activity, same thing. He had the still camera in the bedroom.
That's night vision stuff going, but
I think that's pretty much it. Like a couple in, around the house.
Yeah.
I think Quarantine did the same thing.
Quarantine
did
some
of the night vision stuff.
Actually, I like that movie too.
Yeah.
Nightmare on Elm Street had a lot of special effects, and it was a Wes Craven movie.
Yeah.
He'd already done Swamp Thing.
He had done
Hills Have Eyes.
Hills Have Eyes, yeah.
You know, he was up and coming, and like that had money behind it, but still. But it's like Friday the 13th and Friday the 13th Part 2. I mean, even the first Friday the 13th, it's all like like your own like killer perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the sets, cheap sets. I mean, they were actually on sites,
on locations,
right? It wasn't a so that I know they saved a lot of money there, but yeah, that's
money
makers.
Yeah, and I was like, well, with Halloween, Friday the 13th Part 2, there's no real story other than there's a killer on the loose
and
he's taking people out, you know? So you didn't need too much plot to make it cool. Just get them. Figure out ways to make the kills cool. What you got on your list?
Some of the stuff I got, what I kind of looked at was movies that you'd probably see now, you know, it's a chance these would be some of the ones you'd see pop up on Netflix or streaming services as opposed to being in the movies. And one of the ones which I've talked about this movie before on the podcast. I think you've never seen it. I don't know if you ever saw it, but have you ever seen Spider Baby? Okay, Spider Baby came out back in 1964. Okay. One of the things I love about Spider Baby is two of the people that starred in Spider Baby. This movie came out in 1964, okay? One of them was Lon Chaney Jr., the other one was Sid Haig.
Oh, wow.
One of Sid Haig's first movies. And what's cool about Spider Baby is Spider Baby went on to, not necessarily they wouldn't have been made, but there was definitely influence there with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, with Hills Have Eyes, with The House of a Thousand Corpses. It was about a psychotic, redneck, cannibalistic family that just went around committing murder and mayhem and eating people. And what's interesting is Sid Haig was in this one. He was also in House of a Thousand Corpses. You know, he kind of... Yeah. So that was obviously an influence to Rob Zombie, but yeah, Spider Baby was an independent film. They made the movie. It sat for 4 years because they were concerned about releasing it because in 64 you didn't have movies about cannibal families eating people. You know, it wasn't exactly something that people would have gravitated to over their sensibilities and everything. Yeah. So Spider Baby was a big one, and like I said, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is one of the most groundbreaking horror movies there ever was. That was an independent film that, you know, it was low budget, it's cheap to shoot, it was all in locations. This one for sure. And one of the biggest ones, of course, is Evil Dead.
Yeah. Well, and I had those, like, I had a list of most popular independent horror. Strangely enough, Texas Chainsaw was not on it. I did not make the list. I was just pulling it from a different resource. Mm-hmm. But no, Evil Dead to me is probably, I mean, because all these others had studio, right? Even if it was an independent studio, even if it was just a little bit of money, there was a professional something behind it. Mm-hmm. Evil Dead is family. I mean, I remember listening to Bruce Campbell talk about it, and like they crowdsourced from their parents.
Yep.
And, you know, he was on, like, the Chive podcast, and they were like, oh, did you know? He's like, well, we knew we had something special. So they lawyered up. Like, they figured everything out. But, yeah, like, half the reason a lot of the special effects work is because they didn't have any money. So they were just like, okay, well, how can we make things weird?
Yeah.
And then, like, they unscrewed electrical sockets and then, like, made them to where they bounce back and forth because that was kind of haunting. Mm-hmm. But it was a cheap effect that they could get, like, put a little string in there and, like, make it bounce. Because it didn't cost any money. They could just do it.
Ingenuity.
So it was all ingenuity and, you know, so many of their special effects, because they had no money, they actually invented what is now industry standard.
Yeah.
You know, with certain things to do. And the success of Evil Dead is amazing. And you're just, I mean, and it's terrifying. Following, it's really scary. It's legitimately scary.
You know, you said that the Paranormal Activity is what got your daughter into it. My 20-year-old Evil Dead is what really got her into the horror genre. She's big into it now, but... Yeah, and when we got to meet...
Well, me and my kids have actually watched all three. We watched Evil Dead,
Evil Dead 2,
Evil Dead 2,
Army of Darkness.
And Army of Darkness. And they love those now.
Yeah, they're great.
And, you know, and we did a fresh eyes on the series. Like, because, you know, you see...
You watch it so much, you kind of lose...
Well, you tend to not watch the first one. Because the second one's so similar, and it's funnier and kind of more entertaining. Yeah. I went back and rewatched the first one, and I had forgotten how actually scary it really is. Like, there's the mood.
Less humor.
A lot less humor, yeah. Just like with the camera moving through the woods and the smoke and you know, that kind of stuff. It was pretty eerie. Mm-hmm. Like the real good kind of like, ooh, this is really something. Yeah. But then just watching it, watching everything just kind of go wrong.
Yeah.
As she's getting torn up by the trees and, you know. So like in the second one, he takes her off her head pretty fast, and he doesn't really seem to feel too bad about it. In the first one, he actually cared. Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty devastating loss.
Another big one is, which is, this one, of course, came up when we were talking werewolves, was The Howling. The Howling was an independent film. It was a labor of love by Joe Dante, who also directed The Gremlins. That's another one that... It has some pretty impressive special effects. The transformations in The Howling. Now, once we got, honestly, the first amazing transformation that I remember seeing as a kid was the transformation in Fright Night for a werewolf. That was like the one.
Really?
That's the first one that I saw that was like, good Lord, it's really happening.
Right.
You know, that was pretty awesome. But The Howling, at the same time, that's a great
movie. That's a good one.
You know, American Werewolf in London was not an independent film by any stretch. But I remember when I was a kid, my parents had HBO. They wouldn't let me watch that because it was...
Well, what was good about...
They had a documentary showing, like, how special effects...
Yeah.
And so I remember seeing that, and it had, like, he's like, wah! And his arms, his hands growing. It's and, like, cool. It's like, I was like, oh, my God, this is so cool.
Well, the fact that the company that produced in American Werewolf London, yes, they weren't low budget, but they took a chance on a comedic director, I think, is what makes that one special. The special effects, I think the transformations, I'm not sure how the budget was, but for the Company of Wolves, the transformation in that, one of the transformations in that one was creepy as hell. It was like, whoa. But that's a good one, that Howling.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Another movie we talk about all the time that was an independent film when it came out was Near Dark from 1987, which is, you know, it's one of our favorite vampire movies, of course.
Well, it's probably one of the better vampire movies, period.
Right.
And you cannot buy that movie. If you ever see it out there,
I've been hunting it. I was telling somebody the other day that I'm hunting that one. I saw there's a laser disc, which I would love to get the laser disc. I think that would be pretty awesome. But just the cast within Near Dark, you know, you got some of your favorites. You got
James Jackson. Cameron's crew seems like, you know?
Yeah.
It really did. Yeah. It's like you had like three or four of the aliens movie casts in that same movie. I'm like, what the heck? I didn't even see that movie until about 5 years after it came out, and I was already into horror, but a friend of mine told me, he's like, oh yeah, I love this movie, and he was from New York, so he would say Neodoric, and I was I was looking in the video store for this movie Neodoric, and he was saying Near Dark, but it was Neodoric, and when I finally saw it, I was like, oh man, this is great, good stuff.
One of the biggest independent films, which has, I honestly think this movie has had more, well, when you think about it, everything goes back to modern Prometheus, but as far as the father of the modern day zombie, you know, Night of the Living Dead, that was an independent film that was a labor of love.
Yes.
And the influence that movie has had on society, man, on pop culture and everything else, that would have been a Netflix release. That would have been a movie you'd be watching on YouTube right now, you know?
Well, and the one that feels like a documentary is very influential. It's not fun to watch, but old Michael Rooker in Henry.
Henry, yeah, I got that one on here too. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. You know, that movie was made in the mid-80s. It wasn't released till the 90s, till 1990. It that's a gore movie, dude.
It feels like it's a documentary. It feels real.
Yeah.
That's why it's not fun to watch, because it's not like a werewolf movie that feels real, because there are serial killers out there that tear you up. So.
And another one is, you know, what's funny is this was the better of the two, and the first one was, of course, an independent movie, but to me, Devil's Rejects had more of an impact on horror than House of a Thousand Corpses did. You know, it's like you talked about before, House of a Thousand Corpses falls under torture porn. Let me see what I can do to shock everybody. Let me try to make... Devil's Rejects actually had better character development. You learn more about the origin. It turned these horrible, evil people into empathetic characters. Well, it's the weirdest movie the way Rob Zombie was able to do that.
It's weird because with Corpses is Grindhouse. I mean, that's where Zombie came from. It was the exploitation, yep. The Grindhouse. There's no real... With Dr. Satan and the taxidermy and Otis sleeping with all the dead cheerleaders, like, there's no, like, upside to Corpses. Yep. Right. It's just straight
shock
value. Mm-hmm. And you don't feel for the Fireflies in any way. Like, man, there's some evil, sadistic fuckers. The fact that he was able to later on, because, I mean, they're really bad in Rejects. They're worse in Rejects. You know, like...
But you get, the character development with them, you get to know them. You know, yeah, after a while. You get pissed off when they get ambushed.
Yeah.
You know, it's so weird.
It's a weird storytelling way about him. But, yeah, I mean... Yeah, Corpses is an independent film. Mm-hmm. You know... Rejects got some money behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because everybody wanted... They developed a cult following. Everybody wanted to see a sequel. And I love how he blew the sequel out of the water.
Well, see, what's so crazy, too, is, like, horror movies are almost always profitable. Which is weird.
You're going to have that niche. You're going to have people that are going to...
Yeah.
So I don't understand. But at the same time, though, and you were talking about, like, the Netflix and the independents and the studios wanting to stay off of it. I think I have the number 2 through like number 15 or something of Fangoria. So early 80s, like still trying to find their footing, but they're writing about all of these movies that are coming out. Mm-hmm. And it's a bizarro world when you're reading those articles because nobody likes The Shining. Mm-hmm. They're literally talking about banning Friday the 13th. you know, Halloween's always been God, but it's like it's a topsy-turvy world in those early 80s as far as like what was acceptable, what was not, what was pushing the limits.
Well, you had the Satanic Panic going on, you had everything.
If you're looking at a movie like Friday the 13th, which is, you can call it a capstone in independent horror films, it's not that gory. Mm-hmm. It's really, really not. Its body count is not terribly high. I mean, it's got some interesting kills and it's a little exploitive, but Friday the 13th compared to a lot of its peers, not at all. But it rose above probably because of the controversy, you know, and spawned a franchise.
Well, yeah.
But no, they were literally talking about how it should be banned because it was just too.
Well, you have.
And then Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out before that,
yeah,
and it's far worse.
Yeah,
you know, so I don't know. It's just weirdly.
You have Friday the 13th. You know, the where it's set. You know, camp in a camp and whatnot. You have movies, horror movies that are science fiction from aliens type of stuff, and you know, when you leave the theater, you're not planning on going out into space right away. But you may have a camping trip that next week, and you're fucked.
Yeah,
because that's in your head.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to stay with you for a long time. So some of those that maybe they didn't have, the Starship Troopers gore.
Yeah.
How many of us are going to get out and go fight bugs for real? So that gore and that stuff is there, but true horror really gets at you and you take it with you in your personal life, in your everyday
stuff. It's shit that could really happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what Friday the 13th did, I know, for a lot of people. It's like, oh my God. That's what Jaws did.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to go in the water.
Because, like, I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre before I saw Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th is the one that had me waking up at night.
Hmm.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre didn't. But Friday the 13th, that movie, I kept thinking Jason was going to be outside. Yeah. You know, that's one where my cousin could have put on a hockey mask and scared the shit out of me.
Scared the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Certainly. Well, I'm just saying as far as, like, what we value now, mm-hmm. that we have hindsight versus what they were valuing then. Like, they're like, The Shining wins all of their polls for worst movie.
Right.
It's really strange. And it's like, I saw The Shining for the first time, I think, when I was like 14, 15. And that movie terrified the shit out of me. Scared the hell out of me. I had read the book. I knew what to expect. Saw the movie and was just like, oh, crap. But yeah, so like, I've never not been scared of The Shining. All these people are like, it's not even scary. It's slow and stupid and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, how can you even think that?
Well, yeah, but that's what it was back then.
That's, yeah.
That's the other thing, like we've talked about before, and what makes horror. You know, my kids, when we got to Army of Darkness, my daughter was like, this isn't a horror movie.
I'm no,
like,
it's an action movie.
I'm like, but horror can, is such a broad brush you can use with horror. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have funny horror, you can have a fun horror movie, you can have a scary horror movie, you can have, you know, and I think that's why horror independent films have been so successful and everything. With a comedy film, with comedy fans, it's either funny or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no in-between. With a horror movie, horror fans want all the horror they can get, and they can like the fun horror movies or the gory horror movies. Mm-hmm. So the just the audience with that niche that you're going to...
That, you're right.
They're a lot more accepting with movies that may be not as scary as the next.
I think you're right, too, because some of my favorite horror movies are not scary at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Club Dread. I fucking love Club Dread. It's funny as hell. You know?
Critters, for me. Critters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not scary, but it's one of my favorite... horror genre.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that that's just like you say, Army of Darkness. Army of Darkness is, it's not scary. They got all their scares out in the first two. The third one's just them
being, yeah,
playing, having a good time, yeah. You know. I mean, I like the original Frankenstein. It's not scary, it's sad.
Yeah.
It's good. Creature from the Black Lagoon. I can see why that was scary to them whenever that first came out, but that kind of plays off more of a sci-fi. You know, it's,
right.
I mean, the creature has a pretty decent body count, though. He kills a lot of folks. but...
And I think that's why you just you see independent horror being so successful. Because like I said, horror fans, they can like a scary movie or a funny movie. Zombievers, that's an awesome movie. People talk about it all the time, how it's a good horror movie. It's not scary at all.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's one set. They're in a cabin pretty much the whole time, and that's it. But it's a good movie that has a cult following because horror fans just like horror.
Yeah.
And it's such a broad brush.
I think, too, horror fans, I don't want to say we're less critical because I think we're almost a little bit more critical, but we're more forgiving of things. Mm-hmm. You know, like, say, if it's like Zombievers. Okay. From the title, you know, it's got an element of ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. not Oscar worthy. Like, it's not going to win any prizes for cinema.
Right.
But, you know, the special effects are good. The actors seem to be having a good time. It's tense. It's paced properly. It's fun.
Oh, dude, it's so fun. Have you ever seen Zombievers?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. When the one girl turns, she starts a transformation and she's flapping her tail on the ground. It's the funniest shit, dude.
Sounds like Tusk.
Well, the thing is, so, like, obviously, they're out camping, right? And so then the beavers have a disease. So the beavers are attacking them, and if you get bit, then you turn into, a zombie. Well, for the most part, nobody survives being a zombie long enough because they get dispatched somehow. So there's only one girl who has been infected long enough. But the special effects are such that she's bleeding from the mouth, and she's foaming, and her eyes are all fucked. And she's locked in a room, and she's screaming, and it's gory as hell, and it's dramatic. And then it pans back, and she's got this tail. And
she's going, back. Damn!
And you're just like, oh, damn, Zombievers got me again.
Wow.
But it's such a fun movie. Tucker and Dale, such a fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Black Sheep. I always go back to Black Sheep, because that was such an effective use of practical and cheap special effects in a movie. You haven't seen that one, right?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just, you know, to take a sheep and paint his face with blood and have him walk around a corner is just scary as hell, dude. And it's nothing but putting some blood on a sheep
and
calling him over to come
eat. Those Easter pictures of, like, the white bunnies and they fed them cherries. So, like, the cherry juice is all, like...
the Witch, the movie The Witch kind of did that with the goats and
yeah.
stuff. I mean, they were...
Yeah.
They're freaking creepy. I mean, it was supposed to be what Satan himself manifested in that goat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the use of farm animals like black sheep. I don't know. There's something kind of creepy about it.
I mean, tying a hand to the sheep's mouth and have them run across the field. Yeah, it's just it's so simple and so cheap, but they did it so well, man. And that's a fun movie. God, it's such a fun
did,
movie.
Do you guys recall Project Greenlight?
Yes.
So wasn't the winner for Project Greenlight a horror flick?
I think so.
It was Feast. Was it Feast?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was amazing how, you know, it was an independent thing, and these, and the guys, you know, put the money together to fund this, and it was different movies, and this Feast horror flick is the one that won the contract and got made. I love Feast. It is gruesome. I was going to say, I thought Ron Jeremy came out on it, but no, there's some pretty good actors in that one, but I like when I see the horror movie win.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. You know, because it is. It's tough for some of these guys to get their film made independently like that. So
that's what I got.
Well, all right. Let's go ahead and close it down.
Thank you, Andy, for joining us again.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's good Friday afternoon, so got to crack open a cold one and have a little drink. So we'll see you next time.
Later.
Oh,